Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. We've got two guests for you this hour. Our first is Dr. Aaron Judkins, an author and archaeologist. Now, he's credited with mapping the longest contiguous dinosaur trackway in Western Hemisphere. That's near Glen Rose, Texas, and that was back about 20 years ago. That same year, Dr. Judkins discovered a new theropod dinosaur trail in the Paloxy River, named in his honor the Judkins Trail. He has participated in numerous excavations throughout the United States and Israel. He hosts his own internet show called Man vs. Archaeology, exposing forbidden archaeology and the mysteries of the past. There are books out there also called Alien Agenda, Return of the Nephilim. And Aaron, welcome to the program. I'm looking forward to this.
Hi, George. Thanks for having me on.
I have been fascinated since I was a kid with Noah's Ark. How about you?
Oh, sure. We've all been fascinated by this story that we all grew up with of Noah's Ark. It's been embedded into our culture, and not only our culture, George, but around the world. There are over 500 ubiquitous flood legends around the world, and they all have their own Noah, their own family, their own boat. But there is a common thread, and that is that something happened in the ancient past, and it was cataclysmic.
Absolutely. The late astronaut, he walked on the moon with Apollo 15, James Irwin. He was fascinated with Noah's Ark, became a minister, and he too went looking for this Ark.
He did. One of the great explorers, Colonel Jim Irwin. He was our Apollo 15 astronaut that walked on the moon. His life was about adventure. And he said that he had flown over an object over Greater Ararat in eastern Turkey when he was in the military. And he always wondered about what he flew over. He said it was a superstructure of some kind. And so after he retired out of the Apollo missions, he spent the remaining part of his life dedicated to searching for that anomaly on Ararat in eastern Turkey, making some 9 climbs on the mountain, nearly losing his life on one occasion, overnighted, exposed in the elements, and they couldn't get to him. But when they did, they feared that he was going to be dead. When they got to him the next morning, he was alive, but just barely. And he was hospitalized for 4 days, really banged up, had a head injury. But he spent the remaining part of his life, George, searching for this object on Ararat. And then he passed the baton on to others in all of his research. But he did believe that there is something there.
There was another fellow who died in 1999, Aaron, who was Ron Wyatt. And he, too, was looking for Noah's Ark, wasn't he?
Well, he was. And Ron has made some claims when he was alive. He's passed away now. I would have liked to have met him. I know people that did know him. And I think he had some fascinating things that he studied. I'm very fascinated with some of the claims that he made about the Red Sea crossing of the Exodus. I think there's some merit there. I disagree with him, however, on the Noah's Ark location. Ron believed that it was at a site called the Derupinar site, and this is some 15, 20 miles away from Mount Ararat across the valley up on another hill. And he caught wind of this site through a Time magazine article that came out in 1960. And basically, it was a NATO general who was taking photos of recon photos of that area. And Time magazine, a number of years went by, but then later, that was in the 50s. 1960, Time magazine picked it up of this photograph that was shaped like a boat. And so Ron saw the 1960 Time magazine article and went to Turkey and actually found that site. That was back in the days. This was now back probably in the 70s when Ron went there and actually found this site. I don't know how he found it, but back in those days, there was no Google Earth and Google Maps. So he just used old-fashioned ingenuity and an old-fashioned map, and he got to Turkey and got to the locals, and they helped him find this area. So Ron spent a number of years researching at that site. However, over the decades, multiple geologists and archaeologists alike have independently looked at this site called the Derupinar site. It's shaped like a boat. But in the end, most scientists have agreed, that's not Noah's Ark. Now, there are some who are still looking at that site very, very closely. I'm personal friends with a gentleman who is actively looking at that site and is trying to get permits to dig an actual an excavation at that site. So what we know now is that the claims that Ron made for this particular site being Noah's Ark has not been agreed on by the consensus of archaeologists who have looked at that site.
Wasn't the site of Mount Ararat a danger zone because of the Turks and the Kurds? And has that gotten a little more peaceful, or is it still bad?
Well, yeah, absolutely. This is a geopolitical area that is a hotspot. This is borders many countries like Russia to the north, and Iran, Syria, Iraq. This is a very geopolitical danger zone. It's a military zone. That mountain is a military high point.
Right. Very strategic, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And even so that the Turkish military can't even get on that mountain. Why? Because the Kurdish PKK, the freedom fighters, have control of that mountain. So the Turkish military couldn't even go where we went. It's a very dangerous area to be in. At the time that I climbed the mountain with the team, there was a truce between the Turkish military and the PKK. However, that truce broke in the middle of our climb, while we are actually on the summit.
Oh, jeez.
Much to our, we had no idea until a part of our team was captured. The first part of the team who descended down the mountain was captured by the PKK. Some 40 to 50 men with machine guns came out of the rocks, forced them around the side of the mountain, off the main trail. Now, there is no trail but they forced them around the side of the mountain several hours out of the way, confiscated their passports and their cell phones, and was led to one of the PKK generals. who then demanded a tax.
It's all about money, isn't it, Aaron?
They wanted a lot of money, George. And they talked their way out of it. But they wanted a lot of money, $600,000.
Oh, my God. You folks didn't have that on you, did you?
Oh, of course not. But this was, you know, this was a claim that he wanted because he needed new boots for his soldiers. He needed bread. He needed coats. And so those were the things that they were wanting. Of course, they didn't get any of that from us. But in the end, they let us go. The Kurds are very friendly to Westerners, thankfully. Now, back in the 80s, that would have not been the case. Some of the men who climbed with Colonel Jim Irwin, who we talked about earlier, actually told me that in the 80s, they were woken up about 6 a.m., a bullet ricocheted off the rock, went through one of the tents.
Oh, boy.
Jeez. And then a machine gun came through the tent and forced them out at gunpoint, took all their belongings, put it in the pile, including not only their cameras, their film cameras, their passports was confiscated, but put their camp gear and their boots in a pile and burned it. And then they lined them up against the rocks and pretending like they were going to execute these gentlemen. So
jeez,
it's very dangerous. And you know, like you said, it's not just a military zone, but it's a geological zone. You know, this is an area that has, you know, active earthquakes. There's huge rocks. There's all kinds of wild animals. There's people that will just kill you and for no reason. And not to mention the fighting between the Turkish military and the PKK. So this is a very active spot, and it's a very dangerous spot to be in.
Now, the Bible says that the Ark came to rest on Mount Ararat. So when the seas, the floodwaters receded, that's where the ship was, and it just came on the side. Do we know how high up on the mount it might be, and is it covered in ice? What do you think?
Okay, there's a couple of different schools of thought on that. We believe that, and of course, our scientific expedition did go to the eastern plateau on Greater Ararat. Now, there's two Ararats in eastern Turkey. There's Greater Ararat, which is at almost 17,000 feet. This is an area that is definitely problematic. It has some 200 glaciers, permanent glaciers up on the mountain. This is snow-capped most of the year. It is 22 square miles of ice, 200 feet thick in some places. And it is one of the largest land masses on the earth. Weather is a really big problem on that mountain. So at 17,000 feet, you can imagine trying to work, just trying to get your gear, all the scientific gear that needed to be up there, plus yourself, is quite a task. We believe that it is on Greater Ararat. Now, there's Lesser Ararat, which is right next to it. It's at about 14,000 feet.
And the Bible doesn't distinguish. It just says at the base of Mount Ararat or something like that, right?
Right. What the Bible says about it is that in Genesis, it says that the ark landed on the mountains of Ararat. Now, this is where some differences come in opinion, because most people say, well, the Bible says that the ark landed on the mountains of Ararat, which is plural. Now, Mount Ararat is a single mountain. And so there's a problem here that often gets overlooked, and they discard or discount Mount Ararat as being on the mountains of Ararat. And I did some scholarly work on this because this has been such an issue for ark researchers about where the ark landed. There's alternative sites to Mount Ararat or Greater Ararat. There's the Dhirupanar site, which we talked about with Ron Wyatt. There's Mount Suleiman in the Elborz Mountains in northern Iran. There's also Mount Judi, or over there they call it Kuti because they can't pronounce a J. They pronounce it with a C or a K. So Mount Kuti, some people think that it's about 50 miles north of Mosul al-Rayak, and it's in the southwest part of Ararat. So there's been several alternative sites for these mountains of Ararat. But when you get down to it, some of the serious concerns about Mount Ararat versus Mount Cudi or Mount Judi is really what the Bible says about the biblical mountains of Urartu, because we know in ancient history, Urartu is another modern, is a word that we know as modern day or the region of Ararat, Urartu. This is an ancient time that the biblical name Ararat was thought to be the variation of Urartu. So in ancient times, this is what they would have described this area as, is the kingdom of Urartu. Now, they didn't have vowels back in those days, so they didn't spell it with a U. They just, it was all consonants per se, so it would be an RRT. So back in those days, they would have this area of Urartu, or the kingdom of Urartu, and in the Turkish language, Cudi Dağ, or Mount Cudi, is Cudi Dağ, and this means the highest or the heights in Arabic. And so when some people are looking at Mount Ararat, the highest mountain in this region is Mount Ararat at 17,000 feet. So we know that this is probably the location for the Ark. Now, back in those times, the Ark probably didn't land at 17,000 feet. That mountain, according to geologists, was probably only 10,000 feet.
And this thing is big. It's half as big as the Titanic, but it's bigger than a football field.
Oh, it's huge. And what we know from the references that this is built in probably about 500 feet long, 75 foot wide, 50 foot high, and it's a huge superstructure, just like Jim Irwin thought he flew over. Not only Jim, but multiple others.
You've mentioned Google Earth, Aaron. Can it be spotted from above?
Well, it's interesting you said that, because there are people who have spotted something on Ararat. I've actually got an image captured on Google Earth that shows a rectangular object sticking out of the ice. And it is it's very close to what Ararat would be built as. Now, we have to remember, let's compare the Drupanar side of that boat-shaped object on the ground. The Ark, in the Hebrew term, is not a ship or a boat like we would think of today with a rudder and a sail and all that. It's not designed to sail. The Hebrews had a word for ship, but they didn't use that word. They used the word tabah. And this means a rectangular box.
Yeah, it was built to float.
It was a floating barge. It was a life support vessel. And this thing was built in a 6-to-1 ratio. This rectangular box had straight sides. It had no bow, no keel, no hull. And so we know that this was a container. It was a literal life support vessel. And it floated. And this thing was probably to the point where it could hold 1.5 cubic million feet. That's equal to about 522 rail cars, if we can put it in perspective. So that's a lot of payload in that ark. But the Bible says only 8 people went on the ark. Well, one of the objects of the of contention is well, how do you get all the animals in the ark?
Right.
And so, if we look at species and not the kinds, we understand that there's some 18,000 species, and that's narrower than the kinds. And so you have room for the ark if you go with the species. And so this gives you enough room for about 125,000 species for the animals to go in the ark. So there's been a lot of studies done on this particular subject. By good researchers and scientists who have looked at the math, looked at the dimensions, and they run all the numbers and all the math. And according to them, now this isn't my research, but according to others, there was plenty of room on the ark for everything.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.